Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning, folks, and I apologize. Obviously, I am late to my own show between the rain and me just hanging out with the infamous or famous, however you want to look at it, John Fogerty at breakfast. I just got behind the eight ball. So please forgive me for that, and thank you for staying here and hanging out, waiting for the host of this doggone show to even show up. You know, it's we have a fun time. If you're new to the show, just hanging out with us, that's one of the reasons we hang on the internet, is because there are times when we just get flat behind that eight ball. But we are in Michael Ferenzi's book, Insider Business Tip from a Former Mob Boss. And, you know, it's funny because the actual title of the book is I'll Make You an Offer You Can't Refuse. And if you've just started listening to us on the radio and you wonder, man, what the heck is this guy talking about? Our whole focus is to provide on this show insights from people that have already been there. You know, yesterday on Facebook, I received a private message from a young lady. And she said, Troy, are there really anybody that's made it, that went from nothing to something? And I thought, man, that's sad, because I do hear that all the time. I hear people that wonder. You know, I hear people that say, man, I hear all the fluff and the crap, but is it really real? And that's why I do this show, is because it is real. There is people out there, are people, however the heck you say that have gone from something to nothing. Michael is a guy with no education except the school of hard knocks. And he understands. And today's chapter, chapter 8, learn from your failures. Man, right off the bat, whether or not you believe this, failure is inevitable. Okay, plain and simple. It's inevitable. And here's the interesting part, and this is going to freak some of you out. Jesus failed. And I know that you may be saying, oh my gosh, he's been drinking Kool-Aid. But it's true, and I could, and that's not for this radio show, but I could literally show you several instances in the Bible where, based on man's definition of failure, Jesus failed. So if the only person that ever walked the face of the earth who didn't sin and walked on water, I mean, y'all know the stories whether you're a Christian or not, if he could fail based on man's definition of failure, why do you set yourself such a high pedestal and then get in all this tizzy all the time about how, poor me, I failed, look what people are going to say? I have a saying in my life: until they hang me on a cross, I just keep coming back. It's that plain and simple. So let's get into this chapter. What is it that Michael has to say? And he's very clear. He says, as a soldier and a capo in the Colombo crime family, it was a rare day when I went through 24 hours and somebody didn't offer me a business proposition. He said, after a while, you get good at being able to see what will work or what won't work. But even good instincts won't save you sometimes from a bad deal or a failure in business. And if you haven't made a bad deal, you probably just haven't made enough deals. Because it doesn't matter if it's a business transaction or a people transaction. See, there's going to be times when you're out there and you bring in an employee and you think they're great and they're going to fail you. You're going to have a team member and you're going to bring them in and they're going to fail you. You're going to be with a company somewhere. You're going to have a vendor, a strategic partner, whatever it is, and they're going to fail you, or you're going to fail them. But it's not the end of the earth. In the story that Michael shares today, the Teflon Don, John Gotti, and him got into business, not because Michael wanted to, but because of a series of circumstances. Michael had an accountant that he was associated with, and he was running a swap meet. Now, coming from Kansas City, swap meets are a haven for quick cash. And we used to have a lot of swap meets at the drive-in theaters around town. The man that owned those was a nice guy, a legitimate businessman with some interesting friends. And I, matter of fact, many times I would go to the swap meet myself because I could buy things from a certain individual that I knew in Kansas, and I could buy up authentic duplicate watches and authentic duplicate purses and all kinds of good stuff. And if you don't know what an authentic duplicate is, it's a fake or a knockoff of the real thing. So I would sell authentic duplicate Rolex watches, Gucci watches, purses, all kinds of good stuff. And the swap meets were an awesome place to do that. When Paige and I were dating, she'd show up in her little hottie shorts and tank top and hang out with me, and we'd have a blast. And I'd meet the people around me who were selling tires that they just seemed to get, and radios that they just seemed to have, and fur coats that showed up in the middle of summer. Get that one. You know, you just saw this. So the swap meets had a lot of cash potential. And from an organized crime standpoint, you get to see everybody coming from a distance. So, you know, it's not like somebody was going to be eavesdropping on you if you were having a conversation or anything like that. But here's the kicker in this case. The accountant had a partner, and that partner was a drug dealer, and the drug dealer was stealing from him and selling drugs at the swap meet. Now, that isn't a good thing. You will find, if you study organized crime across the United States, that from the La Costa Nostra, the Italian side of things, for many, many years, they did not get into the drug business, and they were able to run a very profitable underworld operation. And as soon as they broke their own code and they got into drugs, there was major issues. This is one of those situations. The accountant went to Michael. Michael made an offer that the drug dealer couldn't refuse, and he became a partner. But the drug dealer was also under the protection of John Gotti, and that caused an issue. Long story short, there was no way that Michael could make it work, so he sold out. Sold out for six figures. He made a profit. The accountant made a profit. But in Michael's mind, he failed to be able to accomplish what he wanted, and that was to get into the swap meet business and really kind of control the swap meet business. Now, even though Michael felt like it was a failure, even though he made six figures in the deal, for John Gotti, it was a failure. Within a few months, people stopped showing up at the swap meet. The drug dealer was screwing everything up, and the business was gone. The reason that Michael shares this story, and the reason I'm sharing it with you, is because failure is normal. Many times I tell you guys, and I talk about my bail bond and bounty hunting days. My ego, not as a bounty hunter, but as a bail bondsman, got in the way. I was young, just like I am today. I'm willing to take on the establishment, and I did, and I won. I was able to go into certain cities in and around the Kansas City area that had been closed for decades to outside bail bond agencies and companies. The reason I was able to do that is because I teamed up with two insurance companies from different parts of the East Coast. One was in Florida on the East Coast. One was in New Jersey. The insurance company in Florida is a multi-billion dollar company. It was real easy for me to become a general agent for them and represent agents across the different states. I had seven different states, created my first network marketing compensation plan, increased our fees from 10% to 20% in most cases, and because defendants really want to get out of jail, they're willing to pay that. And that allowed my agents to put on other agents, so all of a sudden we have this multi-level compensation plan. But that's not how I got into the Kansas City market. To get into the Kansas City market took a little bit more finesse, and that's where I used an organization out of New Jersey. The name of that company was International, I don't know, something, Allegheny, I think, Insurance. They had three or four different company names that they ran from or ran under. Very small. All they did was bail. Their general agent was out of Oklahoma City. A very interesting character. A character my dad didn't really like. But they were a means to an end. And between what we had in our own assets and the power that they had in certain areas, it was real easy for me to get it taken care of. They were a company that had affiliations, if not were totally controlled by organized crime out of New York. It was a legitimate business, not an illegal business. This is one of those legitimate businesses, just like the New York fish market is owned by an organized crime family. People know that, but it's a legitimate business. Same situation here. I opened some doors. I was able to, again, my ego got out of the way. Long story short, I had a plan. I'd read all the good books from Dennis Waitley. I read all the good books from Jim Rohn. I read all the good books from Napoleon Hill and Dale Carnegie, and I had my plan. And my whole goal was by the age of 25 to be a multimillionaire. That was it. The problem is you live past the age of 25. My 25th year, I turned 25. Business is thriving. On paper, not in cash. On paper, I had a net worth of over $1 million. And between what we were doing with the insurance company and the net worth we were able to show through a variety of legal, financial, mathematical equations, things were doing well. My ego was the problem. A lot of times in failure, even though failure is normal, your ego can get in the way. John Gotti's ego got in the way, and this business failed. My business failed. And by the age of 25, I was out of the bail bond business. My business that I owned went on and was still in business. It was run by other people, but I was no longer involved. We have to make sure in business, whether we're thriving or not, that we never let our ego get out of check. When we do, we're going to be taken to what the organized crime would call school. You're going to be taught a lesson. What we have to realize is that if we can keep our ego in check and we realize that failure is normal, then everything would go right. Yesterday I had a phone call with a couple of great guys. One's a Yankee, one's a Southern Rebel. They've launched this new company. And in the age of the internet, all a person really needs is an idea, a couple $100, and a website. In this case, that's how these guys kind of got started. Few $100, a website, some creative marketing, and they launch. Their hearts are in the right place. I've talked to them. It's easy to tell that they're going down the right path, but they're doing it wrong. I also know in my heart, after talking to them, that they did not tell me the complete story. So even though on one hand I say their heart's right, it really is. They want to be able to become financially independent and protect their families. I question the ethics and the integrity when it comes to their distributors. Because if you will lie to me about something very small, if you will stretch the truth and make it sound like something that it's not, and you name drop with me on purpose, I don't trust you any longer. Same thing happens with Michael. Same things happen in anything. Because all of a sudden I realize your ego's out of hand. You're trying to patronize me. You're not listening to what I'm saying. It can happen to all of us because it's happened to me. Michael shares something in here, though, that I thought was great. He says, some of the biggest names in business got started by failing first. Ray Kroc of McDonald's failed in real estate. Henry Ford failed at his two automobile ventures in the beginning. R.C. Macy's failed 7 times before his store in New York caught the buzz. The founders of the Sony Corporation made all kinds of automatic rice cookers that burnt the rice. They couldn't do it right. Ended up making a cheap recorder for Japanese schools, and the rest is history. Bill Hewitt and David Packard failed at making a lettuce picking machine, excuse me, and an electric weight loss apparatus before they were able to make the computers and the printers and all that that they do today. And one of my favorite, Walt Disney worked for the Kansas City Star. He was the editor of the newspaper, and the owners of the newspaper said, "You are clueless and have no good ideas." See, it's not about the failure. It's about kicking butt and taking names. And when you fall down, you get back up. My new training series that's coming out talks about that. Life is full of second chances if we're willing to take them. I was talking to two great people yesterday via Facebook. And one of them has become a very, very dear friend of mine. Her name's Donna Johnson. She's a top income earner over at Arbonne Cosmetic Skincare. She's in Europe right now with her boyfriend who lives over there. And we were chatting. And I said, "Donna, how did a man in Europe win the heart of a little girl from Phoenix?" And she wrote back and she said, "You know, we were at a mastermind event when we first met. Then we had a trip that we both took that we ended up in Dubai. And Troy, we fell in love." This is a woman who has two beautiful daughters who had been through a really rough marriage, a separation, a divorce. Thought she may never, ever find a man that would love her the way she deserves to be loved. And got a second chance. What was a failed marriage has turned into a beautiful romance. Now, that's just one instance, folks. But when you look at whether it's a personal life or you look at whether it's a business life, the list of failures go on and on, but the list of successes also move us forward. One of the things that I hate and one of the things that Michael hates is that in the name of progress, the schools have changed. The sports teams have changed. All of a sudden, it's everybody's a winner, nobody's a loser. All of a sudden, everybody says you can do anything in life you set your mind to. Instead of saying you need to go find something that you have a passion for, that you're halfway good at, and then you need to become the best at it. See, there's no doubt in my mind that the phrase "you can do anything in life that you want to" is a myth. And here's why I say that. It doesn't matter how much talent my mama has. There is no freaking possible way under the sun that she's ever, ever going to play on an NBA basketball team, not even when she was 14 years old. No way under the sun. She wasn't tall enough. She was a female back then. She still is today, but you know what I'm saying. She's short. Now, let me tell you something. She's fast because she chased me around the house whipping my butt with a switch, and it didn't matter how fast I ran. She was there right by me. So I know that she's fat, but she could never do that. See, we don't want people to lose, but yet here's what happens. When we tell people not to lose, when we act like failure is not an option type crap, when we tell them you can do anything you want to, and then they lose, then they fail, it rips their self-esteem out. And we have to stop that. Whether it's kids or somebody on your team, not everybody should be on your team. Not everybody should be in direct selling. Not everybody should be working at a restaurant or whatever. And we need to understand and realize that. Here's some of the benefits of failure. See, I'm telling you, when we're on these radio shows, you learn something different. Here's the benefits of failure. Number one, failing can show where the defects in your plan are so that you can strengthen them. Failure can reveal defects in the execution or the timing of your plan. Failure can identify weaknesses in a team that need to be addressed. We've all heard about the weak link. And failure can highlight otherwise undetected variables at play. See, this is huge. Let's look at Michael as an example. Michael is on the top 50 of all-time mob bosses He's bringing in $8 to $10 million a week, not a month. Life magazine has called him, you know, the mob's young genius. He invested millions of dollars in a 10-year period to protect himself from failure, to protect himself from losing out, in supporting his family while he's in prison, because he's out of the family, so he's got to provide. He gets out of prison and he's dead busted broke. Launches a couple businesses thinking he can make it, and he loses. But in all this process, he learned that he was good at something. He was learned that he was good at consulting. He was good at speaking. He was good at teaching other people. And all of a sudden, he became a pretty good law-abiding businessman. Took him a while. Took some failure. We're all that way. Even if we look back at organized crime, not everyone can be a mobster. Do you realize that if everyone was admitted into the La Cosa Nostra, into the organized crime family run by a lot of Italians, if everybody was admitted in there, it'd be worse than network marketing. I mean, seriously. See, the one thing that's different between legitimate business, legitimate philosophy, and the underworld, what we're talking about right here in this book as the Italian organized crime, here's the difference. They never, now this is going to sound really weird, okay? But they never, ever lower their standards. They don't, in the couple of cases where they have, you can go and see the movie Donnie Brasco, which we'll show you. That was where the FBI actually infiltrated the Bonanno crime family. But here's the kicker. They don't lower the standards because they know if they do, they will ruin what they have created. The pizza connection, I spoke about it a few days ago, that we watched come through Kansas City. It was part of the Bonanno crime family. Here's what happened. They got into drugs. They were bringing drugs in from Italy. They were running them through pizza parlors across the United States. And during this time period, they let their guard down. And for the first time in history, the FBI was able to put a man undercover that infiltrated the very top ranks of an organized crime family. And at the end of a very long and treacherous undercover operation, they brought down then the ruling family in that Bonanno crime family. When you lower your standards in legitimate business, when you lower the standards of how you're going to operate, the same thing will happen to you. And you will keep failing, and you will keep failing, and you will not learn anything from it. Solomon wrote it this way: it is a trap for a man to dedicate something rashly and only later to consider his vows. You cannot do that. Make your commitments. Set your standard of excellence. Never, ever look back. Here's what I want you to take away from this today. When you fail, pick yourself up off the floor, dust yourself off, and try again. It's that plain and simple. Number two, failure can show you the defects in your plan, reveal the defects in the execution, or maybe the timing. It will surely identify the weakness in the team that you can fix. Number three, you cannot just improve the plan after a failure. Sometimes it just isn't going to work, period. There's no way to fix it. You got to start all over. When that happens, dust yourself off, pick yourself up, move forward. Number four, failure is definitely a tough teacher, but it can teach you your strengths and your weaknesses in a way that no other teacher can. And you need to focus on your strengths. If you've got weaknesses and you know their weaknesses, find somebody that can stand in the gap for you. I'm a firm believer in that. Folks, listen, We got to rock the world tomorrow. Play it straight and legal. You're going to love this, because if you listen to tomorrow's chapter, there is no way that you will not grow even in a little bit. Live life like it's an epic adventure. I'll see you at the top. Be back here with me tomorrow for RealMentorsRadio.com. Bye now.